Happy Monday to all. Welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to the fastest-growing segment of society. To those of you who, like myself, have come to realize that the world's political, religious, military, and economic institutions are corrupt, that they are actually counterproductive, and that they cannot be fixed. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion, it's 877-300-7645. Normally, in the second hour on Mondays, we do sports in the news. One of our trio of devoted sports reporters is otherwise detained today, so we're going to postpone it to tomorrow's second hour. I have to just have a little moment of levity here. The International Monetary Fund now is the de facto expert on the U.S. economy when it's not robbing its American taxpayers to deliver money in bucket loads, some $25 billion to the anti-Semites in the Ukraine. It is forecasting the health of our economic systems. And here, after the first quarter was a net loss, we actually had a contraction of the U.S. economy in Q1. It is now saying that the U.S. economy may grow at 2%, which is essentially status quo. And the blame, of course, was the cold winter. So I just want to remind you that on this very program, you heard the solution for global cooling. The problem of global cooling can be resolved simply by discharging every worldwide nuke into Jupiter, turning Jupiter into a sun. It's right on the brink anyway. All you have to do is start the engine, and we would have the rotisserie effect. Problem solved. Nukes gone. No nuclear war. No need to burn lights at night. You'd have 24 hours of daytime. What a wonderful solution to our problems. Just kidding, of course. Can you imagine being one of the many thousands of political junkies that lined up to buy Hillary's fluff piece called Hard Choices? I mean, why not tell the truth? Can you imagine, though, being you lost the presidential nomination, so you decided that you'd become Secretary of State. You ballooned out bigger than the size of a dirigible. And during such time, all you did was run flack for an administration that lost diplomatically on every front. Now, how in the world can you promote your time as Secretary of State as a means to run for president and garner thousands of people to buy your autographed book at a Costco in Virginia when nothing during your tenure as Secretary of the State went well? In fact, the world fell apart. I mean, close to home, Mexico. The immigration problem with Mexico is greatly exacerbated. The drone running problem with Mexico is greatly exacerbated. The lack of any government cohesion in Mexico, a country now run by drug lords, is unconscionable. The situation with Mexico worsened. Look at Brazil in our own backyard. Nothing now but incompetence and riots. Oh, of course, then we take What was America's largest benefactor, the only country that was willing to buy American T-bills, no longer willing to do so because America has begun a propaganda war against China. And here we sue China, we threaten China, we besmirch China's reputation, we spy on China, we preclude China from acquiring American equipment and American technology. Then we try to constrain China. We do everything we can to abuse, tongue lash, really, the fastest growing economy in the world. The country that has control of some 80 to 90% of the rare earth elements that are so essential in manufacturing and technology today. But not to be outdone, during the Clinton years, we also turned Russia into from an ally into an adversary. So you take the two largest militaries apart from the United States, and you make both of them adversarial during your term of office, and yet you position that as a hard choice that you had to make. Look at Israel. Look what we've done. We've put Israel in a position where we are now demanding that they not only negotiate with, but capitulate to a unity government of Fatah and Hamas, the PLO and Hamas, two of the most lethal terrorist organizations in the history of the world. And, of course, then there's the Ukraine. Everything that America could have done diplomatically to exacerbate this problem, the State Department has done. The CIA has done. Blaming our malfeasance in Ukraine, our instigation of a government overthrow in Ukraine, and funding of the anti-Russian position there, and while blaming the Russians of doing what we have done. But then turn to Africa. Which of these countries is better off for having been mismanaged by the Clinton position as Secretary of State? You tell me which country of this group, Egypt, Tunisia, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, the Central African Republic, Mali, Nigeria. Even you could add Kenya and Ethiopia to the mix. They have all suffered mightily in the last 6 years. They have all deteriorated mightily. And in every country, there is a bit of American malfeasance at the tiller of their tragic demise. But then we can turn to the Middle East. Every one of these countries is worse, more threatening to the world, or more deadly than it was before Hillary Rotten Clinton became Secretary of State. Iran, very close now to having nuclear weapons. Iran now sending 500 of its special troops, its Revolutionary Guards, into Iraq to protect its interest, since it owns Iraq, completing its nuclear ambitions. Iraq, under the Hillary period of time, going from very few terrorist attacks to now being the most deadly place on the planet to live. Syria, of course, completely disintegrated. Afghanistan went from bad to worse. Pakistan, from very bad to much worse. Turkey has essentially now become a corrupt Islamic dictatorship. Look at the carnage in Lebanon, in Yemen. Now we have Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Bahrain, Kuwait, all providing guns, becoming the gun runners to organizations like ISIS, the Islamic State of Syria and Iraq. The whole world. There isn't a place in this world that is better now than it was 6 years ago. And yet, this woman has thousands of people circling a Costco to get a signed copy of her book. It tells you the mindset of those whose religion is now their politics, and whose gods are now politicians. You know, a woman at the highest diplomatic office in the world, and she does absolutely nothing to better the lives of the hundreds of millions of women abused by Islam, as a matter of fact, makes their condition worse. Well, while we're on the subject of worse, let's recognize that in Kenya today, as Kenyans were watching the soccer games, the football games, depending on your proclivity for foot or soccer, and describing the World Cup events in Brazil. As the folks were just minding their own business in a coastal town on the Kenyan coast and watching the soccer game on their television, Al-Shabaab, the lads, which is a fundamentalist Islamic organization, not linked with Al-Qaeda, but associated with Islam, decided to go butcher them. They began killing people, going door to door, burning people alive in their homes, men, women, and children. It is an example of what happens when your foreign policy is broken, when you don't understand that the only thing that these Islamic organizations has in common is Islam. Yes, they set hotels ablaze, boarding houses ablaze, torched vehicles, houses, and shops. There isn't anything that Islam can build, but it is very effective at destroying everything. Turning our attention to the world's powder keg at the moment, President Rouhani assured Iranians that their young men would not be sent to Iraq, not yet anyway. It is clear that his government is far from keen on putting boots on the ground in Iraq, so writes the journalist from the BBC. Of course, as the journalist was writing these words, there was affirmation that there were at least 500 Republican guards with boots on the ground in Iraq. Yes, it is true. I know it's hard to believe that the nation that America is negotiating a nuclear agreement with, that their moderate president that the West so embraced, lied. But yet he did. Yes, Iran has a great deal at stake in Iraq. It is now Iran West, and they have sent in their Republican guards to do what the American-trained and equipped army of Iraq could not do. Defend Baghdad. More on this after the commercial break. America should be concerned. Here it's negotiating with Iran to get Iran to slow down its development of its nuclear bomb. And it's negotiating with the guy that ran cover for Iran for a decade, Rouhani. And now Rouhani, who is the de facto leader of Iraq, what Rouhani says Iraq will do. Malaki is a puppet of Rouhani. And so here you have Rouhani, who, during the years that that Iraq and Iran were at war with each other, Rouhani was one of the highest-ranking Iranians in the military. And, you know, that war was fought to a stalemate. In fact, had it not been for the final blow, really, which was the Iranians arming the Kurds in Iraq to attack the Sunni government of Iraq, where they finally made progress and they turned the tide of that war so that the Iranians were rebelling because of their involvement of the Kurds. And then Saddam Hussein's three attempts to quell the Kurd advance that was promoted by the Iranians, and failing three times using conventional weapons to say it's either I gas them or Iran claims Iraq, gas them. You know, and during that war, there had been on both sides the use of tremendous amounts of chemical weapons. That was why the death toll was so high. But ultimately, the Iranians said, you know, it's just not worth the ongoing carnage. And the Iraqis recognized it, too, and they finally said, you know, that's enough already. So what they could not achieve in a chemical war and a conventional war with Iraq, against Iraq, the United States facilitated when it gave Iraq to Iran. And Rouhani now is the de facto leader of Iran. In fact, the United States is being asked repetitively, are we going to engage the Iranians in the attempt to put down the civil war by the Sunni members of ISIS, the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria. The fact is that while the United States is saying we're mulling it and we're discussing it, the fact is the United States is in negotiations with Iran. Iran is the is America's only hope of not having all of its weaponry fall in the hands of ISIS. And so we're now dealing with a person who is lying on behalf of his government militarily, who is also the person we're negotiating the treaty with relative to Iran gaining control of the nuclear bomb. The very guy that's saying, no, we would never use our nuclear technology for anything but electrical energy is the same guy that says, no, we're not going to put boots on the ground. Your sons are not going to fight and die in Iraq, when in fact he has at least 500 and maybe even 10 times that amount of soldiers already in Iraq. The Iran has been, this article from the BBC says, has been working hard the past 10 years or so to help put in place a pro-Tehran government in Baghdad. Now, I don't know what has happened in terms of all of the details, but somewhere along the way, between a utter failure in the education system, between utter indoctrination of political correctness, between a melding of politics and with academia in the advancement of political correctness, of socialism and of a secular approach to religion, if you will, and politics. But somewhere along the line, maybe it's because newspapers are no longer seen as having value, with most of them either having gone out of business or are being huge economic burdens. But there just aren't any journalists anymore. There is no one who is writing for a media outlet that can think. You know, Iran's not working hard to obtain a pro-Tehran government in Baghdad. It was given a pro-Tehran government in Baghdad. It is the government in Baghdad. The author of the BBC piece goes on to say that after the Iran government has been working hard these past 10 years or so to put a pro-Tehran government in place in Baghdad, which is just, I mean, utterly stupid, goes on to say that any threat to the status quo would be a blow to these efforts. There was no effort. The political party that Malaki ran on, ran as part of, is an Iranian political party. It's not an Iraqi political party. It's funded to the tune of billions of dollars by the Iranians. It's not funded by the Iraqi donations. The individual that determines who gets to run for election on the in Iraq is the Grand Ayatollah al-Sistani. Al-Sistani means that he is from the Iran. He is an Iranian Shiite, no different than any of the mullahs in Tehran. When America and George Bush made the decision to invade Iraq and to depose Saddam Hussein, the consequence was going to be a Shiite government controlled by Iran. There was no way to avoid that. That was the absolute guarantee. Whether or not the Sunnis can rebel against it and overthrow it, well, we'll have to wait and see. But so long as the people in Iraq vote, it's going to be Iran West. This article goes on to say, there are credible reports that the top commander of Iran's Quds force, General Qasem Soleimani, is in Baghdad, helping to strengthen the defenses of the capital and the northern city of Samarra, and to coordinate Iraqi Shia militant groups which are loyal to Iran. There, at this point, the Grand Ayatollah al-Sistani said specifically that he wants every Shia man between the ages of 12 and 60 to join the Shia jihad. And they will. This is now a religious civil war in Iraq. A source in the Iraqi province of Diyala, which neighbors Iran, has told the BBC that some 500 members of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard have entered the province with the aim of providing military training and advice. The source said that the Revolutionary Guards did not plan on getting involved in the fighting. Yes, that's what LBJ told Americans as he sent ever more Americans into Vietnam. No, we'll just be there as advisors. They won't get involved in the fighting. One of the reasons that there's been so much carnage and that Iraq is such a disaster is because of the leaders of the free world at the time of the invasion. One of them was Tony Blair. He was prime minister of the UK when George Bush twisted his arm and encouraged him to join the coalition to invade Iraq. He was now saying, you know, if we hadn't, anybody with their half a brain recognizes that if America hadn't deposed Saddam Hussein, we would not have this mess on our hands. That the civil war in Iraq, the civil war in Syria, are a direct result of the American and, to a lesser degree, the British invasion of Iraq. And so when asked whether or not he would take accountability, whether he would stand up and say, yeah, you know, now in hindsight, it appears that we made a horrible mistake. No, that's not what Tony Blair said. He has rejected arguments that Iraq would have been more stable and peaceful today if the U.S.-backed war, which claimed the lives of 180 U.K. personnel and 7,000 American servicemen, had not happened. Now, to make that claim, you either have to be completely irrational, completely ignorant, or completely disingenuous. He claimed that the violent insurgency in Iraq was the result of the West's failure to intervene in Syria, not the 2003 invasion to topple Saddam Hussein. I mean, this is, it is breathtaking that someone could make that kind of statement. The reality is that the war in Syria has occurred solely because America invaded Iraq. If America, with Great Britain joining in the invasion, had not invaded Iraq, then Iran would not have gained control of Iraq, and at that means that Syria would still be an ally of Iraq, not of Iran. And that means that there would have been no reason for the Sauds, for the Kuwaitis, for the Qataris to be sending weapons into Syria to terrorist organizations like ISIS to bring down the government in Damascus, because the balance of power in the Middle East would have been the same as it has been for decades. But when America invaded Iraq, And all you have to do to recognize what I'm telling you is true is to read any of the press releases from Saudi Arabia, from Kuwait, and for Qatar, going back over the last 4 or 5 years, particularly in the American media. They were blunt about America's role in changing the balance of power in the Middle East through the invasion of Iraq and giving Iraq to Iran, which gave Iran total control over Iraq, its own nuclear program, so that it was no longer battling Iraq, as well as Syria and Lebanon. And because of that influence, the Sunnis in Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and Kuwait, as well as Turkey, felt threatened. And that is why there is the Syrian proxy war. So rather than the Iraqi civil war being a result of the West's failure to act in Syria, it's exactly the opposite. It's the Syrian war exists because of the invasion of Iraq. So it's not just the fact that the man said the opposite of what's true, but that there's no one with the BBC with the ability to hold him accountable and to present the obvious. Now, going on, he said that, speaking on the BBC's Andrew Marr show, and I'm assuming that Andrew Marr is equally as mentally handicapped as Tony Blair. Blair said, quote, "Even if you'd left Saddam in place in 2003, when 2011 happened, and you had the Arab revolutions going through Tunisia and Libya and Yemen and Bahrain and Egypt and Syria, you would have still had a major problem in Iraq." Au contraire. Au contraire. First of all, they aren't Arab revolutions. I mean, they aren't Arabs in Tunisia. They aren't Arabs in Egypt. They're Africans and Egyptians. Carthaginians, if you want to deal with an actual race of people, a nationality, and Egyptians. It was an Islamic reformation in those countries. And there is absolutely no coalition. And he's going to say, indeed, you can see what happens when you leave a dictator in place. Look what happened with Assad now. The problems don't go away. You know, it's breathtaking again in the stupidity of it. And the inability of Andrew Marr to challenge Tony Blair. I mean, the civil war in Iraq is Sunnis trying to oust a Shiite government. If you had left Saddam Hussein in power, you would not have had Sunnis trying to oust a Sunni government. And it's not hard to figure this out, folks. In Syria, the reason that there is a Syrian civil war is there you also have Sunnis, but now a Sunni rebellion against a Shia dictator. The difference is that you've got Shia versus Sunni at the head of these countries. The common denominator is not dictator. Every Islamic country has a dictator. There isn't any Islamic country that isn't headed by a dictator. Yeah, some of the dictators, most of them are elected. But they are nonetheless dictators. In Iraq, if a Sunni dictator was in control of that country, you would have had a 0% possibility of a Sunni rebellion against the Sunni dictator. And had America not invaded Iraq and deposed of Saddam Hussein and given Iraq to Iran, then there would have been no change in the balance of power in the Middle East that would have necessitated the Saudi Arabians, the Qatari, the Kuwaitis, and the Turks providing weapons to the Sunnis to overthrow the Shia government in Syria. They all got along prior to America's invasion. After America's invasion, they didn't get along anymore. It was the invasion that lifted the control mechanism that was keeping Sunnis from killing Shia and Shia from killing Sunnis. Now that that control mechanism is gone, you have all-out religious war. It is, again, it's astonishing that one of the two men most responsible for this war takes absolutely no responsibility for it, and the media can't hold him accountable. And Mosul, Iraq's second largest city, the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria, ISIS, set up about asserting its control, issuing an 11-point charter, spelling out the creation of an Islamic State, along with new laws, new punishments, and new incentives, according to the BBC. Alcohol, cigarettes, and drugs are outlawed. Citizens will henceforth be required to pray 5 times a day. Thieves will have their hands amputated, and women must stay indoors, except in cases of emergency. Ah, yes, it is a fine situation that we have brought on Iraq. To those who may ask, who are you? The answer is, we are soldiers of the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, who took it upon themselves to bring back the glory of the Islamic Caliphate and turn back injustice and indignity, the charter announced. It also struck a conciliatory note, telling citizens that those who embraced its vision would be forgiven. Whoever hated us yesterday is safe, unless he rejects, fights, or abandons Islam. Oh, so long as you're a fundamentalist Muslim, then you're fine. All you have to do is surrender to the most satanic, the most menacing, the most diabolical, the most uncivilized religion in human history. And you're just going to be wonderful, except your soul. Except you'll be promoting sexism and sexual abuse. You know, according to this new charter, you can't smoke a cigarette. You can't drink a glass of scotch or have a beer, but you can commit rape. You can sexually abuse little girls. You can be a pedophile. You can be a mass murderer. You can do any number of things that most people would consider to be savage, but you can't have a drink. Truly amazing what they have imposed, and the fact is that they actually believe that they're working for their God. It's just too bad that their God is actually Satan. Allahu Akbar indeed. Whoever hated us yesterday is safe unless he rejects or fights or abandons Islam. The charter says, the charter would go on to say, those who oppose Islam will be killed, crucified, or have their hands and feet cut off, it added. To which the journalist said nothing. Said nothing. It's like, okay, that's what they said. I'll just write it down. I'm not paid to think. This is a really crappy job. I don't like this job anyway. Why should I bother to do any research? That line is from the fifth surah of the Quran. It happens to be the 33rd verse of the Quran. And what ISIS is doing is saying that the rules that they are imposing, which will include crucifixion, which will include amputation, which will include murder, are directed by the Quran. Quran 5:33, go and read it. Do you think that the journalist was capable of making that connection? Of course not. There were celebrations on the streets of the city overnight in Mosul, according to videos posted on the internet, as ISIS fighters paraded some of the booty they had captured from fleeing security forces, including an assortment of army and police vehicles. American vehicles, as it would turn out, part of the $25 billion that America squandered on the Iraqi military, all of which have now gone to ISIS. The Iraqi official confirmed numerous eyewitness reports that the militants even flew captured American helicopters over the city. Some 500,000 civilians fled. Now, that would be a third of the population of Mosul, seeking refuge in nearby Kurdistan. What a mess. And it's American weapons that are making it possible. We'll return to this story after the news and commercial break.